Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege to welcome to the Larry Report a man who needs no introduction. He truly is the dean of the Municipal Bond Reporting World. He's the editor of the municipal area at Bloomberg, Joe Mizak. I first knew him when he was a bond buyer, but now he's emerged at the top. And he is also the author of several great books in the municipal market, which I recommend to you. We had him on the Slater Report to talk about his Encyclopedia of Municipal Bonds, which to me really is the definitive work if you're trying to learn the municipal bond market. And then if you're a government official or public official, a book that will stop you from making many of the mistakes that get made, the Handbook of Municipal Bond Issues. So it's I recommend his work to you. But he reports at Bloomberg. He does a weekly video and writes many great articles, publishes their municipal brief, and also tweets. He's very, got a lot of great content. But one of my favorite things is they put out a stat book, and the inspiration for our inviting Joe to join us today is he's got his 2014 first half stat book, and it's very rich with some interesting things going on. The municipal bond market is very interesting for both investors and people just interested in knowing what's going on in the world. So, Joe, welcome to this Larry Report, and tell us about the stat book.
Well, it's just we take a Bloomberg data, which is proprietary data, mainly Bloomberg data, and we put it together on this in a kind of very brief format. Well, as you imagine from Bloomberg, the Bloomberg brief title, and it's just we stick to the facts, but have a lot of interesting material on it. One of my favorites is the who's number one underwriter in each of the states. League tables, as you might expect, mutual fund rankings, default statistics, all sorts of interesting material. And yet managed to keep it under 30 pages, and has all sorts of graphics and charts and things. And that's just a nice quarterly thing. That the half is usually a bigger than the first quarter, and of course the annual that we put together at year's end is a little bit fatter, but not too much. It has a little review section about what happened during the period, and all sorts of relevant material for the readers out there.
When I was in college, I got straight A's in Shakespeare, and that was the classic comic book. Remember those. But to me, this is the ultimate financial comic book on the municipal market, because it's like reading a great comic book. It's very well laid out.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, well, this year has been a surprise. The municipal market has performed very well. And there were many of us who said, long-term bond market, the long-term bull is over, interest rates are going to rise, scared of bonds. Some were smarter. They said, time to cash out some of our profits and equities and move into municipal markets. But the market really had a good performance this year. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
All right. Well, so far this year, the munis have returned 8.1%. And if you compare that to investment-grade corporates, they're about a little under 7%. Treasury is a little under 4%. Of course, the stock market's done extraordinarily well, so the S&P 500's about almost 10%. Commodities, on the other hand, are in the negative numbers, negative 3.5%, I think it is. So, munis have done very well. On the other hand, we haven't really seen rates go up as people had expected, and a lot of people, the experts say, chances are rates aren't going to be rising until next year anyway. And I was at a conference last week in Salt Lake City, as a matter of fact, and Ward McCarthy was on a one of the speakers, and he opined that he didn't think the Fed would really move until maybe middle of next year, because his thinking there was that, well, you know, once the this is something the Fed has in its quiver, and if they go too quickly and decide, you know, rates are moving up and the economy takes a real hit, there's not a lot extra they can do. So they want to make sure that the recovery in the economy is really humming along, which made some sense to me.
Well, and also the pressure on the Europeans to continue to do their equivalent of quantitative easing is very heavy. So anyway, but it has surprised me. The other thing that surprised me is how well high-yield munis have done and the capacity of the market to buy more. I was watching your TV report on the Detroit water and sewer bonds, and I thought, I'm amazed.
Well, yeah. They were able to get that deal done. I have a theory on this, though. there was an explosion during the 90s, I'd say it began, of asset managers. There's more people now either managing money for funds or separately managing accounts. So you have a tremendous group of people who are managing munis and chasing after them, and which means there's an enormous appetite for bonds, and including, you know, quote unquote high yield bonds, and you know, we could get into that at some point, but you know, in the old days, you know, high yield bonds were I don't know, for that the Kearney, Nebraska museum on the roadway there, you know, unsecured stuff, and you know, maybe you were getting 8-9%. Nowadays, high yield is much less adventurous because usually there's some municipal guarantee involved. But the Detroit Water and Sewer got done. Almost everything in this market is a blowout because there's such demand for it. And of course, this year we have volume is down, but
yeah. So the new issuance is pretty low.
Yeah, issuance is low, so there's not a lot of bonds to choose from. And not only is issuance low, but you also had a big year for, you know, redemptions and maturities. The whole business about issuance being low, though, I know there are some people who get a little overly nervous about that, but this is the thing that you would expect municipal governments to do as they rebuild their balance sheets.
Right.
They don't borrow as much, so that's right. A good thing.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of trends going on in the municipal market, and I wanted to check in with you on them. One is my question was, did the new bank rule changing the definition of municipal assets to illiquid assets from liquid go into effect today?
They approve that, I believe, and you know, what does that mean for the market? I don't know. You know, short term, right up front here, I wouldn't imagine a great deal, only because I'm not one of those people who tend to get panicky. Long term, it might drive costs up a little bit because banks have been a larger, they've been a big buyer of munis for the last couple of years. So that, without them being able to say, hey, we have this very, we're able to say, here's this very safe liquid asset on our books, i.e. municipal bonds.
Right.
Municipal bonds getting that title, it makes them a little less alluring to banks.
Well, all across the fixed income markets, we're seeing, you know, ever since the reform legislation, we're seeing just reduction in capacity in the fixed income markets. So the ability and willingness of dealers to maintain liquidity is always a question. And, you know, that's happening on one hand. When I saw this, I thought, okay, well, if they change the definition for banks, how's that combination going to hit liquidity? At the same time, I'm figuring ETFs are making a difference as well. How's the ETF moving into the municipal market working?
You know, ETFs they're there, but there's not, you know, there's still a very small,
right.
There's really still a handful of them. So that's something that's developing at this point.
So it's still really a mutual fund world.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, and will we see more ETFs? You know, undoubtedly, as we go along here.
Well, if the market really needs liquidity, it's going to be the mutual funds. You know, it's going to be, what are the mutual funds going to do if a lot of money shifts out? But to me, with interest rates, I don't know. I don't see it happening. But
I'm working on an interesting piece for the fall. I'm taking a look at. It's called the Muni Meltdown That Wasn't. I take a look back at 2009, especially 2010, and I go over a lot of the statements and press coverage and prognostications about the municipal market's imminent demise, and have been taking a look at those and saying, you know, what happened here? Why didn't the muni market meltdown? B, why were these people out there taken so seriously? I will say that had Twitter been as popular in 2010 as it is today, a lot of the assertions made about the municipal market would have been blown out of the water because they were being made by I don't know, I guess I'd call it as a journalist, people unfamiliar.
Right.
People familiar.
Yeah, well, it was really, I'll name names.
And on Twitter today, that would be blown apart. People would just say, you know, what are you talking about here? You don't know what you're talking about because, you know, this is the whole idea of a muni market, you know, market-wide meltdown was, you know, if you think about it, a sucker's bet.
Right. I'll never forget when I, because I'll name names, when Meredith Whitney came and said, you know, that this is going to happen. I thought, now there's a woman who doesn't understand municipal credits and how they really work.
Right.
Yeah. But,
exactly. And you know, had anybody, a lot of these, I'm still trying to put together, you know, a narrative about this, but it was a very, I think... For example, if you take a look at a Bloomberg terminal and you do a muni ticker lookup, you could go through and, you know, put in a name and you could get 12 pages of, you know, one name of, you know, Smith County, or just put in a name and it just keeps churning out. And you're looking at it and you're saying, hey, who are all these guys? And it seems to me that a lot of people somehow thought that municipalities sold debt. You know, like a city sold bonds, and that was it. It was just one kind of bond. Whereas, in fact, as we know, cities sell bonds, maybe four, five, six different kinds of varieties, and some are GOs, some are revenue bonds. There are school districts involved. There's state intercepts involved. There's all these various kinds of credits. And to just sit there and say, well, everything's going to go, seems, you know, in retrospect, it seems insane. And yet this was a common refrain in the market. But that's for the fall. I know you want to have me back.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny because if you look at the players in the municipal market, in my experience, you have a lot of people with very deep knowledge of how state and local governance run and work, and, you know, are very big mutual fund players who have very big positions and are not about to lose their head. So there's a lot of depth to the municipal market and a lot of experience. You know, I'll never forget one of the guys at First Boston. Remember when the stock market melted down in the late 80s?
Sure.
The guy who's running the First Boston desk was on the phone with the old chairman of my firm sort of advising. And at one point he called me and he said, you know, this is really terrifying because everybody in the high volume committees over at the exchange is, you know, under 30 and has never experienced a down market.
Sure. Yeah.
But the muni market isn't like that because you know, and maybe it's changed since I've been involved, but you have a lot of people with either deep knowledge of the market or as experience within government. So there's a lot of stability within the, you know, within the people. And if they do tweet, Joe, and I think you would know given how you tweet, you know, you're right. They would have turned it pretty quickly.
Just the it's just, it was, you know, it's a, it was very much a media story. You know, what you had was you know, a few headlines in major mainstream media, and you had a lot of material on blogs, including business blogs, and things would come out and they'd rattle around the market and they'd be picked up on, you know, Business Insider, which had just been you know, established a year or two before, and these, you'd see a lot of these sensationalistic headlines, and you know, then they'd link to stories on blogs, and you know, these would be picked up, and you know, kind of they'd rattle around the market. So this inexpert testimony would get echoed and amplified.
Well, here's what people didn't understand.
As I say, you have Twitter, and you have a much more people would attack it much more quickly. And you know, what I'm finding too is that, you know, sort of in the latter half of 2010, the street or, you know, various people who knew what they were talking about, they came out with a series of very serious reports and surveys and you know, FAQs and things like that to try to reassure people. I'm not sure how many of those achieved you know, the celebrity that some of these other things did, but it was a very to look back at it and say, okay, how did this happen? Why did it happen? And you know, the Meredith Whitney on 60 Minutes was just sort of the exclamation point at the end. This was a year-long 2010 mainly thing, although there was a piece done in 2009 called Dark Vision, which is the first thing that I think said there was going to be a meltdown in the municipal market. So it's very it's fascinating to me to go back, especially because I've saved all this stuff, old media guy I am, and clip files and things like that. And so I'm finally able to clear out the area on my desk. And,
remember, if you're not knowledgeable about both the mortgage and municipal markets, then the fraud in the mortgage market was absolutely extraordinary. And so I think a lot of people couldn't discern, you know, if that level of fraud could happen in the mortgage market, why couldn't all the same players do it in the municipal market?
Yeah.
And, you know, and part of it is what is the extent of the fraud, but then what is the ability of the players to clean up the fraud without hurting investors? And so I just think a lot of people didn't have enough roots in both markets together to discern between the two. So that's why you had that silly behavior. But, you know, I hate to say it. There are certain firms to go unnamed. If they could get away with the municipal market, they'd probably do it. So, yeah. So let's talk about, I also regularly see stories on federal tax issues. Mm-hmm. Is there anything brewing that would in any way impact the taxation treatment of municipal bonds?
Well, you know, I don't see it this year because we're going into elections.
Election.
And,
yeah.
Actually, I don't even see it. You know, I mean, maybe. I mean, kind of surprising to see anything next year, but there are parts of the federal government that are very eager to get rid of the tax-exempt market and take a look at the tax exemption and say this is nothing but a subsidy and here's a couple of billion we could pick up. The disruption this would cause is, of course, enormous. Some of the issuers are coming around and saying, well, let's be prepared just in case. But right now, there's just not that feeling of imminent disaster. There's nothing that's out there that's going to get any traction. You know, there may be some ideas that people say, well, we'll get rid of the tax exemption. A month and a half ago, Ron Wyden came out and said, well, you know, this the tax exemption is something that makes people think about the equity of it. And we did a little piece on that in the brief, and that got a little reaction, because people said, what do you mean, the equity of it? And I said, oh, my heavens, Mrs. Dodge lives. And how terrible it is, this handful of people get to claim tax exemption, and it's just a big boondoggle for the rich, which is, not the right.
Not true. That's just not true.
The tax exempt municipal market. But yeah. I don't really see anything right now that's going to be done. But it's one of those things that we have to be eternally vigilant about.
Right. The other thing is, there is, because we do have, it's not a lot, but we do have a few, and including some interesting bankruptcies going on. There, my question for you is there any kind of evolution in bankruptcy case law that we should know about?
Interesting. It's funny. Those people back in 2010 who were so eager to talk about how municipalities, when given the choice, would repudiate their debt. Some of the criticism was not entirely misplaced. I mean, the idea there, the logic there, was that politicians will choose to default on debt service or try to repudiate their debt so that they could not hurt public pensioners and various other parties. So that wasn't entirely misplaced. What was misplaced is how far most municipalities will go to avoid in any way damaging their access to the credit markets, which they need continuous access to.
Right.
You have a lot of, as you say, and okay, let me, if I could just drop back a second there. If you look back in 1995, even the good burgers in Orange County, after the county declared bankruptcy in 1994, in 1995, there was a couple of week period where they were talking about reserving the right to repudiate a bond issue that was sold in 1994 or 1993, I think, to top up that investment fund that they had out there. And that really, people were agog about that. They said, wait a minute, this is Orange County talking about repudiation? But of course, it's only when the county was in bankruptcy that they even mentioned it. And needless to say, they shelved that idea very quickly. But what we're seeing now is, for example, you have the biggest bankruptcy so far in Detroit, and they're trying to put a haircut on GO bondholders, something which is absolutely astounding to people in the market now. But, like you mentioned, you say these are exceptions. These are very exceptional times. So not everybody is out there saying, yes, we have to give the GO bondholders a haircut. And Detroit is such an extraordinary case.
You're talking about a city where you lose half the population.
Right. There's so many things about Detroit that are exceptional. And see, people take exceptions and they try to make them national. Just like I say, wow, are there precedents that are going to come out of Detroit? And I don't think so. Lessons, yes. Lessons by the barrelful. But precedents, probably not. As I mentioned in last week's video, I don't know if you know him, but Paul Isaac told me years ago, he said, well, the market is, what you're telling me, Joe, is the market is particular and specific to a remarkable degree. And
that's, yes, it is.
That's stayed in my mind ever since. Detroit is a very particular case. And it's amazing. Back in 2010, Standard & Poor's noted that, here's Detroit. It's one of those places that is undergoing a tremendous amount of stress. And yet, back then, the state of Michigan had always said, no, we can appoint emergency financial managers, but we don't want to see any of our municipality is enter Chapter 9. And they especially said that about Detroit. And it's funny, Standard & Poor's in late 2010 put a report saying exactly that. You know, Michigan has assured us on many occasions. Might have been interesting if, you know, back then, if one of these gloomsters had said something and said, well, you know, guess what? There may come a time when the state of Michigan decides that Detroit is going to go over the side. So
right.
That's the biggest case we have to worry about now. And, of course, the trial is ongoing.
Well, you know, when I look at the list of municipal bankruptcies that was in your, you know, as well as the technical defaults.
Yes.
One of the few stories I see is the utility story. You've got a couple of municipal utilities. And, you know, if you look worldwide, both Europe or just through the G7 nations, there's no doubt about it that the changes in the marketplace and changes in technology, including oil and gas technology, is putting tremendous pressure on the economics of utilities. I think over the last 2 years, we've had almost a 50% wipeout of market capitalizations in Europe. So it doesn't surprise me that municipal utilities are under pressure as well.
Yeah. Well, what are we going to do with that Puerto Rico's electric utility?
Well, that's what I you know, it's funny because I've never delved into the Puerto Rico story, but I think at one point you said that, you know, the 2014 municipal story of the year was going to be Puerto Rico, because every time I look at how much they've issued, and they just did an issue in the beginning of the year, too. It was the largest, wasn't it the largest junk deal, $3.5 billion? Anyway, so I don't want you to spend a lot of time on Puerto Rico, but what in the world is going on in Puerto Rico?
Well, you know, the governor suggested legislation, and the island passed it, setting up a sort of Chapter 9 for various agencies on the island. And according to people familiar, this was supposed to enhance the Commonwealth's general obligations. But people actually said, well, wait a minute, this means that you have several billion dollars in various other agencies that might be restructured as a result of this. And it is it's sort of crammed down legislation, if you will. And there's a lot of, it's being debated right now. In fact, there's a court case that the mutual funds raised against the law, saying, well, this is unconstitutional. You think the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Congress has to pass something like this, not the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. So there's a big argument over that. But, we could, according to, what we've been carrying, the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, which is, you know, one of
right.
the largest utilities out there.
What's the total volume outstanding that could be subject to – subject to all of this?
Something like $7 billion or $8 billion, something like that in bonds, which is a fraction of – I think the total Puerto Rico amount of debt, GOs and revenues and everything else is something like $72 billion.
So total outstanding.
No, but of course that wasn't brought up back in 2010. Nobody mentioned, hey, keep your eye on Detroit, keep your eye on Puerto Rico. No. But there's one of those issuers that it's like it's in the muni market, but it's not of it. Considers Puerto Rico, as a municipal entity, a governmental issuer. It's like, oh yeah,
right.
And there's Puerto Rico, and they're triple tax exempt everywhere, right?
Right.
And then that's it. And a lot of mutual funds buy them to
Well, it was the triple tax exemption that was the attraction.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Puerto Rico was one of those things that I don't want to say escaped people's attention, but people weren't as focused on it as they might have been. I always used to note whenever Moody's came out with their state debt medians.
Right.
I always used to write snide comments about, well, you know, here's the state debt medians, and, you know, which usually turned out the top issuer had, you know, $5,000, you know, per capita debt. By the way, Puerto Rico has $15,000 per capita,
right.
You know, tax-supported debt, which, you know, seemed insane. But people didn't really take up on that. It was just,
Joe, the total mutual funds are about half a trillion. What's the size of the total outstanding paper in the muni market? Do you know?
Of the muni market?
Yeah.
3.7 trillion.
So it's about 4 trillion.
Munis. If you want to stack that up against other bond markets, treasuries are about 3.7 trillion. Treasuries are about 12 trillion. Corporates are about 10 trillion, and mortgages are about 9 trillion, or they were.
Okay.
So
my one skepticism about that is I think the accounting in the muni world is better than some of those others.
Yeah.
So I think the 3.7 is probably a more legitimate number.
Yeah. but it's the maybe the fourth largest of the bond markets. It seems, and gosh, just a fun thing to write about.
So let me jump onto what I see as one of the critical issues, and one that I've seen a lot of mudslinging and not a lot of, you know, sort of hard coverage, and that is the issue of municipal pension fund obligations. We just had the SEC require one state, I think it was Kansas, to redo their disclosure,
right,
for pension liabilities. And the issue is not just what the accrued obligations in the pension funds and what the impact on the budget is, but what the healthcare, you know, sort of what the healthcare liabilities are and what those are going to cost to fund. Have you taken any look at that?
Well, the healthcare, you mean the OPEB issue?
Is that what it's called, OPEB?
Employment benefits?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you bring this up. This is one of those things that I remember Meredith Whitney in her book, Fate of the States, said nobody's talking about this now. And I said, nobody's talking about it? My heavens, they can't shut up about it. Really, if people wanted to in 2009, 2010, well, especially at the end of 2009, you had the Joshua Rao came out and said, well, you know, what you should really do is discount the holdings to a treasury rate of either 0% or 3% instead of your return assumptions of 8%. And, you know, it went back and forth. And I know that we certainly, Bloomberg carries an annual look at state and local pensions, you know, and ranks how they're doing. So this is one of those things that I would say since late 2009 has been front and center, especially because of the losses incurred by the pension funds. So it's one of those things that's on the front burner. I would say it's the most important issue that states and municipalities are looking at right now.
Right.
You know, but that being said, it's not something to panic about. I mean, the municipality,
right.
Or the National Association of State Retirement Administrators said, hey, these investment assumptions that we use aren't pulled out of thin air. The 30-year rate was something like 9%. So most of them were at 8, some of them were in the 7s. They weren't just making it up. They actually had gotten those over the course of 20 or 30 years. Another thing is that this is not, you know, so much of the panic coverage, if you will, made it seem as though a state had to come up with all this money immediately, when in fact it's over the course of 30, 40, 50 years. So it's like the railroad tracks. When you look at them, you think they're going to come together out in the distance, but they never do. Now, what have the municipal governments, state governments been doing over the last 5 years? Well, they've been trying to cut back on what they owe, and it's very difficult to rework actual underlying pensions. But as you mentioned, you could sit down and negotiate with your unions and with your public employee retirees over health care and the various other benefits they get, and cost of living adjustments and things like that. So I think that I want to say 40 out of the 50 states maybe have already made, you know, have already tinkered with their plans. And of course, you know, when you're a big state, when you make a little move, it has a big impact. So they've been working on that. Now, there are examples, Illinois, New Jersey, that are more troubling. But, you know, you kind of have to look at it and say, well, this is not sustainable. So, you know, what's going to happen? Is the legislature going to get off the dime and pass some serious reform, or, you know, what's going to occur there?
I'll tell you,
I'm not as gloomy on the pension fund front as I might have been 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, I'm not. It's interesting. I'm not gloomy on the state and local pension fund, because I think they're in relatively good shape. If you look at the studies I've seen, where they've got the hole and the question mark is on healthcare. And of course, when you try, if you're a state or local group and you try and deal with that, then you get entwined in the extraordinary intensity and complexity of the rules and regulations and the federal involvement, and it makes it much more challenging. But I have to tell you this, I live in a town where the city council meets once a month, and you know what they do at the city council meeting?
What?
They read the bills and then they write the checks. We have no staff, so we have no pension fund, and we have no former staff, because we have no current staff. It's all done on a volunteer, but you know, our fire department is volunteer, and I think our current CDs and reserves are enough. If we stop collecting taxes, our current reserves and CDs would take us, I think, 10 or 15 years. Yeah, well, I have three properties here, Joe, and my combined property taxes for all three properties are less than $500 a year. So, you know, when you sit in a place like I live and you read the stories of the benefits and pensions and the staff in Illinois, you just shake your head and say, how can this be?
Oh,
so, yeah.
Well, do you remember the guy a couple of years ago? Was it Bell, California, where they got the city manager and he was making $100,000 a year?
I can't, I'm sure there's a story. There's a logical story, but it's just, you know, it's stupefying. It's baffling to me how this could be the case. But of course, that's the guy that gets the headline, not the guy who, you know, spent his whole year running a town like I live in for $25,000 a year. So let me also ask you, the one thing I do think is, I think, technology changes things, and government has been relatively slow to engineer many times for logical reasons. But I do think we're going to see a sort of re-engineering of how municipalities function, given all the different things that are going on. And I just had to bring up, because I saw I live in a state that has the second highest per capita marijuana. Marijuana is our number one cash crop in Tennessee. And on a per capita basis, we're right behind California. And I couldn't help but notice how well Colorado is doing on its marijuana sales tax. So I didn't know if you had any comment on sort of the newest revenue source for municipalities.
Well, you know, I think the first one in gets the lion's share.
Touché.
You know, probably many others are going to embrace that because they've seen how successful it is in Colorado. And I know, is it, have they already started selling in Washington?
I don't know.
But I know they were all, you know, set and ready to go. So we'll probably see more of that. But, if you take a look at the I mean, for example, you take a look at Atlantic City.
I was going to ask you about Atlantic City because that's a very tough situation.
Yeah, because there was so much competition, you know, sprang up over the course of years. So I guess Atlantic City gambling was allowed there in 78 and had a very good run for maybe almost 20 years. And then all of a sudden a lot of surrounding states started putting in casinos. And so now the Atlantic City suffers. So
right, but a lot of that core market, Joe, is if you look at what's happening to the discretionary income of many of the households that were part of their core market, it's getting really hammered. And, you know, so you see the same thing in Las Vegas, too, is as that, you know, as a family has got $100 to $1,000 of discretionary income a year or a month, has it hammered by both sort of the squeeze in the economy, sort of the slow inflation and things like Obamacare, it really hits the, you know, because you have all these different businesses, particularly the casinos, who are feeding from that little pot of discretionary money. So they all get wiped. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing I have to ask you about, because it's my old true love, is infrastructure. Any hope for increased interest in funding infrastructure?
Oh, I would say there's certainly lots of talk about it. Is there going to be some big national effort? I would, much as I like the idea of it, I doubt it, because on the national level, if Congress says, all right, we're going to put a bullet train here, well, to get that passed, we have to put in roadways here and rebuild bridges there, and you have sort of a, there's still that unwillingness to, there's ability to pay, but there's unwillingness to pay.
Right.
At the federal level. So I think it's probably something that's still going to be tackled mainly at the local and state level with, you know, federal government matches if they could get them. And I think that's how we'll see things work. It would be very nice if the federal government was a little more interested in setting up a big infrastructure bank or something like that to invest in the nation's fabric. On the other hand, it's one of the things that the municipal market's always done.
Right.
You know, otherwise, I mean, I when this started coming out, not coming out, but you know, when people talk about it, everyone, you know, as you say, every couple of years it gets a certain amount of popularity, get some headlines, America's crumbling infrastructure. I sat there, I said, wait a minute, have I been living a lie? Have they been supposedly raising with all their bond issues? Of course not. I mean, that's how our roads and streets and bridges or sewers are being, you know, rebuilt and maintained. So I think it's something that the market handles in a very slow fashion.
Right.
I think that's always been the way. And every once in a while, you'll have a little jolt where a few more things get financed in a big way. But it's just slow but steady.
Yeah, so we won't, on infrastructure, we're not going to do the vision thing in a big way for a while. Okay, well, looking forward for the rest of the year, what do you think the big issues are going to be? Clearly, Puerto Rico is going to be a story, but what else? What else is before us this year?
Well, I think you certainly have it's going to be very interesting to see how Detroit settles, you know, how that whole thing concludes, because we have the trial we're working through there. It's probably going to be, measured recovery on the municipal front. I don't think we're going to see, any big boom in defaults. I don't think we're going to see, primarily because municipalities take a look at how lengthy and expensive the Chapter 9 process is. I don't think we're going to see any big increase in defaults.
I'll tell you what my clients and subscribers want to see, Joe. They want to see how they can sell some stock and buy 5% on a 10 to 20 year municipal, preferably in their state. And every time they look at the market, they say, not close. Not close. Now, that's been great for returns because yields have been coming down. But, you know, so the people who bought them when yields were high, I mean, I remember, I don't know if you remember 1980 when the long, somebody did a long bond in New York for 18%. Remember, interest rates are off the charts.
Oh,
and
I guess the top whoops yield was 13.44%.
So I must be thinking about the corporate market. So I forget what the long tax exempt, but there was a long tax exempt market yield, and you know when they hit rates. And I remember somebody saying, "Oh my God, are we going to be a banana republic? What is this?" But the people who locked in, occasionally I'll look at somebody who locked in long bonds at one of those periods, you know, so they're having a glorious time because they're trading, you know, their bond price has just risen. So, but for everybody else who's looking to get some yield, you know, they keep saying, where's the bond market? Where's the muni market when I need it? So all I can tell you is if the 20-year muni market should ever hit a easy 5%, there's going to be a flight right into you.
My heavens. 5% about, think about it. And we were well over 8%, 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, yields are low. Okay, well, Joe, it's been a real pleasure having you on the Solari Report. I wish you the best of luck. Keep me posted. When is your next piece coming? Tell us a little bit about it.
The Muni meltdown that wasn't should be out in, I would imagine, late November. And I know you'll want
to. And it's going to be a book?
Well, it's going to be a large supplement to the brief, I would imagine, maybe 30,000, 40,000 words. It'd be a nice.
Oh, fantastic. This is going to be good. Is it coming out before or after the election?
Oh, come out after.
Okay, well, so just give us two more seconds on how we follow you. Just walk us through what we can find at Bloomberg, how we can follow you, how we find your Twitter feed, et cetera.
Okay. The Twitter feed is Joe Mysak. There's not a whole lot of us out there, so that's okay. And I often tweet a lot of the material that's been in the issue. We also put out the daily brief. If people want to go to
it's very good
website and take a look at the section where it says Bloomberg Briefs, they can click on that and that'll take them to the briefs page, because we put out about, I think there's 18 titles now of various daily and weekly and monthly publications that people could take a look at and subscribe to or not. And of course, you know, I'm on the Bloomberg terminal, and every once in a while I'll write something and that goes on the main Bloomberg website. So I think that's how they could follow me. And, I always tell you I'm an old media kind of guy, but Twitter remains an amazing resource in the Muni
scene. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it absolutely does. Well, Joe, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We wish you the best of luck. Keep me posted on when your next piece comes out, and we will absolutely have you back on the Solari Report.
Catherine, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye now.